Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Off we go into another week. Arizona has 2,456 reported positive tests for COVID-19, 65 deaths from the disease, and we're here talking sports. It's not easy to do, but we are the distraction for you, and we do it day in and day out right here on sports360az.com. We tape this at 10 a.m.-ish, and we have people that watch it throughout the day. We take parts of the show and put it over on our Fox Sports Arizona television show, Brad Sessmatt Football AZ, that airs every week. After two consecutive daily reports of double-digit deaths, the number of fatalities went up by only one yesterday. This according to the CDC about an hour ago. The total deaths has increased daily since Friday from 41 to 52, 64 to 65. It's very important just to keep you guys abreast of what is going on. This is not a time to just, I don't want to hear, I don't want to see, I don't want to know. I'm out wearing a mask. Wife made me a mask, pulls my ears when I'm out there because we have our aging parents that we're trying to take care of as well during this. And to be safe, it's the best way to put it. A lot going on in sports, though. There is a ton to talk about today. And our opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with life insurance. So on Friday afternoon, I was with Michael Stricker from Sagicor. I asked him to come play golf with me. We social distanced. We talked very little business, but he did say that there are a number of people that are out there suddenly applying for life insurance and looking at their personal situations with what is going on right now. And it didn't matter the age group. Just people are looking at it saying, I need to look into life insurance for the first time. We all have obligations. Simply log on to Sagicor Now. Get your free quote. Guys, protect what matters most, all right? You have a lot that's going on in this world, and right now is the perfect time to look at your personal situation. At Sagicor Now, we appreciate Sagicor and their support. Eric jumps on in. Jordan jumps on in. Guys, I think football represents normalcy, is what was trying to be preached over the weekend. I think as we sit here today, after reading very smart people like Peter King this morning, who wrote, be prepared to see football games without fans, and the NFL schedule maker is now looking at a 12-game season or a 14-game season, I think that we have to start looking at football not happening in some way, shape, or form, or they're going to try to figure it out. When guys like Brian Windhorst use terms and Adam Schefter use terms like reality is setting in, Adam Schefter used this morning, Brian Windhorst for the NBA, not optimistic. This is pointing towards a long haul in sports. And I'm not being Debbie Downer here to start out with. I'm optimistic that we're going to get through this. But how are you guys doing off this weekend, Eric?
I'm doing okay, fine, not too bad. As for football, let's see, we're in early April. If the experts are saying it, they probably know something that we don't know. But I think football has the advantage because you can always either shorten the season or just push the season back. So I'm not total doom and gloom on this, but the reality of the situation is I do tend to agree there will be some sort of change to the football season, whether it's no fans in the stands, whether it's a shortened season, potentially no season at all. We're just going to have to wait and see.
How you holding up, Jordan?
Fine. You know, doing okay. The weekend, it was kind of one of those that going to try to step away from Twitter and Instagram for a little bit. And because you can certainly get into just, you know, swiping all day just and consuming. So it was kind of like, all right, we're going to put the phone away for a while, go on a walk. I did a bunch of work on the back end of Sports 360 AZ, working on some projects, and so yeah. And on the football side, I think as long if competition is coming back in whatever form, if fans aren't in the stands, if it's a shortened season, if whatever it is, if there are players on the field and there is something that fans can consume in whatever way, whether that's virtually or not, that's a win. So. You know, and that goes for any sport. I was reading this morning about Jeff Passan, a story from him about South Korea and how they're gearing up for a baseball season. You know, they're far enough ahead that they're able to do it. And there are a lot of concessions that need to be made and a lot of adjustments that have to happen. But, you know, it was an interesting read. He interviewed a couple of the Americans over there and how just the differences between what's going on in South Korea, not only just in terms of social distancing and things like that, but also the sports viewpoint as well.
I think when and that's good on the baseball front. I know, Eric, you had a story that Ken Rosenthal had where the entire season of Major League Baseball could be played in Arizona as one possibility. And, you know, guys, all of us just jump on in on this. I don't know how can you do the Reds against the Cardinals and do it in Goodyear when it's July and it's 110 degrees or 115 degrees. I mean, would it be expanded rosters? I guess I'm just thinking in our climate, and Ken Rosenthal would know. Right? I know it was picked up by other outlets off of him. That's one thing that I've found that's very annoying right now in media is somebody does a really good story and then everybody else just writes off of it and doesn't give that person credit. So I'm going to give credit all day long. But could we see baseball being played here? And I'll get back to football in a minute. Why I'm not down on that. What do you, Eric, you, the one that sent me that story, what do you make out of that?
I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to, you know, July temperatures. And one of the things they considered, because there are only 9 Cactus League parks, they would do double headers with one game starting at 3, maybe 2 East Coast teams, because that would be 6 o'clock their time, and then 2 West Coast teams playing the 7 o'clock game. Can you imagine a 3 o'clock first pitch in July? I mean, I don't.
But it's a dry heat.
It is a dry heat. What happens if there's a haboob? I mean, just think about that. I mean, the teams are out there and a haboob hits. Yeah. The one advantage the article said, which I agree with, is the distance from Mesa to Surprise is much closer than the distance from one part of Florida to another part of Florida, what the Grapefruit League deals with on their end. It would keep the team centrally located, and I think it might work, but like you said, the heat there, you know, everyone would want to play at Chase Field with the roof closed. Like that would, if I were the Diamondbacks, I'd be like, yep, we're going to play at our home stadium. And you guys can figure out where you want to play.
Yeah, but think about this, though. The idea of the tourism that's just been destroyed, just been decimated, that even in the middle of summer, I bet there would be people that said, well, heck, if baseball's going on, I could go stay at the Princess and get a room that usually in the middle of summer is $100, where in January it's $500. And the Princess would say, absolutely, come on in. Let's bring them on. I'd be down for that.
If they are allowing fans in the stands. Can you imagine if you're coming from the East Coast to the West Coast, you get out there, and oh, by the way, we're not allowing any fans in the stadium. So you can sit in the Princess and probably watch the game on TV. But
well, and I think this takes me over to where Peter this morning had a note from Judy Batista of NFL Media. Judy used to write with the New York Times. And the quote was, as long as we're still in a place where when a single individual tests positive for the virus, that you have to quarantine every single person who was in contact with them in any shape, form, or fashion, then I don't think you can begin to think about reopening a team sport, because we're going to have positive cases for a very, very long time. So daily temperature taking for every player, every coach, daily testing on the football field. It sounds fine, guys, to say, okay, the stands are going to be empty. But for every player that's out there that has to be tested, if just one of those guys, just one of them, tests positive, you can't say all of a sudden, well, that guy can't play today. Well, he's already been around everybody else, so who else has he infected? And that's why the idea of a 12-game or 14-game schedule, it feels like, because Trump met with the 12 major commissioners on Saturday on a conference call. And from that spun this. So from that conversation, did it come out of, you know what, we think we can get things handled by late September, early October, but we don't want to say that publicly. These guys that are dropping this sort of information, for Adam Schefter to say reality is setting in, for Brian Windhorst to say not optimistic, for NBA owners on Windhorst's part preparing for the worst, hoping for the best without fans, that's not stuff that those guys throw around idly. So for anybody out there who's screaming, you guys aren't doctors, not me, not them, merely being the messenger here on this.
And I think it's something that obviously it's always going to be a fluid situation. But yes, those, when you hear from those voices, it's they always know something that when, yes. And they're revealing, it may not even be the full story that they're revealing, but the nuggets that they have been cleared to share, they're going to do. But when it is an Adam Schefter, a Brian Windhorst, an Adrian Wojnarowski, a Jeff Passan, like, yes, those are the voices that have kept us informed the most when things are normal, and you should probably assume the same when things aren't normal.
I think one of the biggest unknowns is a lot of people that have the coronavirus have no symptoms right now. So people, and that includes athletes, the ones that haven't been tested, I feel okay, but they could have it. And if they're not quarantined, that's a huge issue, because some people are getting sick from it. Others are not really getting the symptoms, but are still testing positive.
Governor Newsom, it's good points on both your parts. Governor Newsom out in California is one that I've been taking a close look at, because he's just drawn this line that we're not doing this. And that's why the NFL Network, Peter had this morning too, the NFL Network is probably going to merge with ESPN for the draft, because in California, they shut down the California studios, and the governor is not going to reopen that. It's not a necessity. The governor's quote was, I'm not anticipating that happening in this state. We've all seen headlines in the last couple of days in Asia where they were opening up certain businesses, and now they're starting to roll back because they've seen some spread. There's a boomerang. One has to be careful to not overpromise. This is talked about if the NFL would come back with crowds for games in August or September. Of course, all of us are concerned about college football, even more so. So in California, it could be one way, and Governor Ducey over here could say, you know what? It's 110. ASU football, we need football on a Saturday night, but we're not going to play UCLA or USC because they're not going to be allowed to travel over here. We're not going to be allowed to play Stanford or Cal because they're not being allowed to travel over here. This goes over to a bigger problem in college athletics, where there is no commissioner to oversee it. And so the politicals, I actually appreciate a governor on the football end of things, and I'm not taking a shot at Governor Ducey. Governor Ducey's been fine. He's been very supportive of the Cardinals. Michael's been very supportive of Governor Ducey. I get it. But I kind of like the stance of Governor Newsom out in California saying, we're not doing this. You know, oh, I want my football back. No, not at the risk of people's lives.
And that was one interesting thing with the Jeff Passan article I referenced was the attitude over in South Korea is it's always been like, this is going to be nice when we get back to it. But the priority has always been public health, not let's try to string along normalcy for as long as we can, and then drastic measures have to be taken.
Well, Jordan, I think, too, there's this whole narrative being pushed by some of we need to get back to being normal. Well, yeah, right. I don't think any of us like being apart from one another daily, or not being allowed to go do our things, or what little left up here sprouting up, you know, like I've got a weed patch going on. You know, whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. And yet there are those that, oh, man, I just can't live without sports. Well, it's important. It's a sports show. But I'm not going to sit here and moan and groan about where are my sports when we have much, much more important things to get into than why we don't have it. It's important. But come on, look at your priorities on all this. That's what's driven. When I see stuff going on in New York City, and I talk to friends back there, I get choked up. I don't know about you guys, I've gotten choked up a few times when I see that stuff.
But that's the society we live in. Everything's fast. We want the quick fix. We want the quick meal. We want everything immediately because that's how we live as Americans. So it is difficult for people just to take a step back, relax, let the situation play itself out. I mean, it's so refreshing when I walk my dogs to see families on bike rides.
Yes.
Because for the longest time in my neighborhood, you never saw families on bike rides. Yes. You see someone walking the dog, someone going on a walk, but never groups of people spending time together outside safely. And it's kind of nice.
Chris and I went, my wife and I went to Costco the other day, and I felt like I was going into the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland because they had the line that goes back and forth and back and forth. And we went in there and we ran into some people from school and we social distanced and it was fine. We weren't out very long. I went to Home Depot on Saturday. I decided to do a garden with my kids in the backyard. And the line for that was longer than Costco for toilet paper. I think there's a lot of people that are saying, hey, it's early April. The weather's really nice. Mm-hmm. Let's do something around the house. And I agree with you on that, Eric. Every morning, every night, I walk. And now there's people out that I just haven't seen walking around. And I've had people that have written things on Facebook that were really deep about how that it was time for a reset. And maybe on the back end of this, there's going to be some people that reset everything. I really believe that. I want to talk to you guys about security in the NFL on the other side, if both of you can stick with me. And then we've got Zach Buchanan from The Athletic. Really good story that Zach wrote about three Diamondback minority owners suing Ken Kendrick over forced buyouts. We'll get to that at 10:35. And then, Eric, why don't you tease ahead? What do you have coming up? It's something new that we started last week. What do you have coming up at 10:50?
We're going to do our second installment of 2020 Vision, where we are honoring high school seniors as they are going on to college, and some maybe all the way through their sports seasons. Others may have lost their spring sports season. Alexandra Zelaya is a girl who played at Millennium High School. She's signed to go to the University of North Carolina to play basketball, and she's just a real cool person. So look forward to catching up with her at around 10:50.
And Jordan, you've got one tomorrow?
Yeah, Case Montanil, who is one of the best soccer players in the state. He's over at Brophy. They just won their second straight state title. He's going to UC Irvine, but I caught up with him last week just about how he's processing everything and how he's, you know, continuing to train, but also, you know, some of the, like you guys have touched on, some of the benefits of, you know, spending time with his family right before he's going to go off to college. And you know, what that experience is like. So he's taken some nice silver linings. So it was refreshing to get to talk to him.
All right, we're late for break. We'll take a break here back on the other side with the guys. I want to talk about cybersecurity and in the NFL draft and why Nick Saban is handing out iWatches and other coaches are saying, you got to be kidding me. We'll get to that on the other side. Stay with us. So this story broke last week, and it's picked up some momentum, and that is the SEC is now exploring whether Alabama will be able to continue using Apple Watches to monitor its football players' physical activities. So, of course, Nick Saban said, yeah, the program provided Apple Watches to his players. 77 Apple Watches were sent out. And the new strength coach said that they're very instrumental in setting up his whole program of what we're doing with the players in terms of Apple Watches for their workouts, apps on their phones, weight training programs. Okay, so let me try to unpack this. The strength coach was there before, went to Georgia. Strength coach at Alabama, big deal. It is a big deal. Athlete walks out. Athlete can't be paid, of course, but athlete can get a watch. What's an Apple Watch go for, guys? You know, it's
$300.
Does that sound right, Jordan?
I'm going on the Google machine right now.
You're gonna go on the Google machine. Right now.
Clearly, we don't have it
from Apple $400. Oh, so in the $350 to $400 range.
I purchased them for my kids. I don't have one. I just think that's a little much. I actually have a family member's OCD about their Apple Watch when we're out walking. And I've been married to this person for a long time. If their Apple Watch doesn't get restarted and their steps aren't counted, then the walk just didn't happen. It's just so, but guys, to think that at the college level, a coach would say, you know, we need to get these watches on our kids' arms so that we can monitor them. And the director of sports medicine at Alabama is viewing information collected by the players, including their sleeping patterns, heart rates during workouts, and other health-related data. Dabo Swinney said he didn't believe monitoring devices like Apple Watches were permitted, so of course he's not happy. And then Tom Herman of Texas was kind of like, what? This goes back to not having a commissioner in college athletics, okay? What is Arizona State, or what are Arizona State and U of A doing that could be similar or not similar to this? Is this cheating? At the end of the day, is this cheating, Jordan?
I think in the how it is described, I don't think it is cheating, but are they being truthful? And I know we keep talking about, you know, everybody wants to have some sense of normalcy. It's just nice to hear, even in a global pandemic, teams accusing Alabama of cheating. It just brings it back to a couple months ago, which is really nice. I don't think, as it has been described, I don't think it is cheating. But I also do remember a couple years ago, this is slightly different, but ASU had GPS in their helmets to track how much guys were running, and that after every game, yes, they'd say, Kalen Ballage ran 6 miles in an hour and a half, and like that. So technology is obviously going to be incorporated in sports, but how is that going to be manipulated behind the scenes where it is cheating? So I think as of right now, again, what I've heard, that's not cheating, but who knows what's really happening right now.
Eric?
What's that old adage, guys? Coach is coach. Football players, I mean, football coaches coach. And I think the most ironic thing that you said, Brad, in that last, in your last bit was Alabama, Clemson, Texas, yeah, probably three of the biggest revenue generating college football money making machines that we have. Is it cheating? I don't know, maybe. But what college program is it cheating? It's just they all do. Even Stanford, even the high and mighty schools cheat to some degree. But yeah, I tend to agree with what Jordan said. I mean, anyone that can take a little shot to poke the bear at Alabama, I think, no pun intended, I think it's fine with me. So,
health and well-being of our student athletes during this crisis.
Of course. Right. So,
hey, backup left tackle, go out to your mailbox and here's an Apple Watch. It just rolls in, but we can't give you any money. No, he can go sell that bad boy on eBay and make some money. Right?
Someone buys you a meal, that's a violation, but you get an Apple Watch from your team.
That's
you're good.
All right, one other thing here, because I know the time is short. Zoom. Jordan, you and I have talked about Zoom. Mm-hmm. We've talked about cybersecurity. You and I, you use Zoom more than I do, both of us teaching at Cronkite classes, you more than me. Zoom has come out. It's been this big deal. All of a sudden, Zoom was hacked. Now today, Peter had this, Peter King in his column. There's NFL draft people that are really concerned that other teams could hack them on their Zoom and take their information. And so the cybersecurity, imagine guys having a wizard of cybersecurity with Zoom right now. You would think Bill Belichick would have this guy somewhere sequestered. And he could just tap into the Jets or the Bills or the Raven or whoever. So we have this going on right now in the backdrop of the draft.
Yeah, he'll be titled like innovation consultant or something like that. But yeah, I think that's a real thing. You always hear about, opposing coaches maybe getting the playbook ahead of time or stealing signs or knowing that. This is how they can get that edge right now, if that is a route that they want to go. That's having the playbook for building a roster for an opponent. So I think that there should be real concern there. But I also think that there are a lot of smart people within the NFL who get paid a lot of money to have security at all times. So I don't
Zoom
think it's going to be...
Zoom
was hacked, but there are also older technologies or more seasoned technologies that they probably can use that they're more familiar with to keep them from getting hacked.
All right, Eric, you got the final word on this one.
Okay, well, this is great because I just downloaded the Zoom app this morning, so it's only fitting that, of course, we're talking about this on today's stream show. The one thing I'm looking forward to is looking back in 3 to 4 years and kind of reclassifying this draft and seeing which GMs are like, hey, you know what? We had our hands tied behind our back. I can't help it if I took a guy in the first round that I should have taken in the sixth round.
Yeah.
I wonder how many GMs are going to lose their jobs because they didn't have the proper, I don't know, information, workout schedule, blah, 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 because the draft is so weird, for lack of a better term, this year.
Well, whoever takes Tua has got to be holding their breath. Whoever takes Tua has got to be renting rather than buying, because either you hit on it big or you're just done.
You talked about it, Brad, with Brock Heward last week. I mean, he didn't throw at the combine, and his only body of work since the injury is that little 30-second video clip that he put out, or his agent put out, of him dropping back and throwing some passes. That's it. Like, the medical might have come through okay, but they don't have a chance to actually see him and look at him in person.
No, that agent is Lee Steinberg, who we've had on the show, a good friend. And yes, you see how that is put together. All right, guys, step aside here. On the other side, Zach Buchanan is going to join us. So I want to talk with Zach from The Athletic. He had a terrific story about the ownership group of the Diamondbacks and trying to get three minority owners. They're suing Ken Kendrick over forced buyouts, trying to get them to be bought out. They're saying the buyouts are being forced on them. We'll get to Zach and this story next. I think at the top of my reading over the weekend, Zach Buchanan's story at The Athletic, and if you have not subscribed to The Athletic while you're housebound, do it, okay? It's worth it. Zach wrote a story, three Diamondback minority owners are suing Ken Kendrick over forced buyouts. I don't want to give away the entire thing, but I wanted to have Zach dive in on this because this is really interesting, especially the timing of all this. One of the groups involved is an original investor in the franchise back in 1998. Those of us that have been here longer than a nanosecond know that the Diamondbacks were loaded up with a lot of investors very early on, and Zach had plenty of information that was really interesting about the number of investors today with Major League Baseball. In a nutshell, Zach, and I appreciate you jumping on board with us, in a nutshell, tell the listener about this story in a nutshell.
So the central conflict of this story is that Ken Kendrick basically has, as the managing general partner, told 22 minority partners in the franchise, each of whom owns less than 1% of the team, that they need to either get to that 1% threshold or accept a buyout from the team at a price that has been set by a third-party appraiser. 19 of those minority owners have done one of those two things, but these three owners who are suing are basically saying, look, you can't force us to make this choice. If we want to just stick at whatever level we're at, we should be allowed to do that. And so that's why they're suing. And there are some other conflicts kind of below that. They dispute the valuation of their shares and would like to hire their own party to evaluate them. But essentially they're saying, you can't force this choice on us. And the team is saying, no, we're within our rights to do this.
How many owners are there on this team?
I don't know exactly. I know that at one point there were over 70 owners, and you know, a lot of them kind of very low-level minority owners. I think the ownership group is now down to around 10. And a lot of that kind of weeding out has been done over the last decade or so as the team has kind of worked to get rid of all of its debt, and they've bought back kind of stakes from minority owners voluntarily throughout the years. And this is just kind of the latest step in this, it seems like.
And so the timeline on this situation, how did it get to this point?
Well, it got to the team apparently started thinking about this back in December, which is when they went to MLB. And MLB sent a letter from Deputy Commissioner Dan Halem saying, yes, we support this. We think it's a bad thing to have so many low-level owners in your group. We want you to thin that out. And then in January, they sent kind of a letter to all these 22 owners saying essentially buy up or buy out. And a month after that, after these three owners who were suing had not responded, they sent those three another letter saying, well, since you haven't responded, we're taking it to mean that you're choosing the buyout. And as of this moment, you're no longer limited partners of the team. And that's kind of where this conflict really kind of gets going. And they filed suit last Tuesday to kind of get this resolved. So it's kind of unfortunate timing with the coronavirus. None of them were thinking about that when this happened. But it's just the way the legal system works.
Zach Buchanan with The Athletic with us. Is this a simple story of an owner trying to thin out an investment group, or is there more beneath the surface as you've been working on this?
As far as I can tell, it's simply about weeding out the investment group. I know when I posted the story yesterday, everybody was saying, oh, this means they're moving to Vegas or something. Like, I don't think that has anything to do with this. Maybe the team does have designs on moving to Vegas. I don't know, but I don't think this is a step they need to take in order to do that. I'm sure if these three owners were thinking that this is just a step they're taking in order to be able to move the team, they would have mentioned that in their complaints that started the lawsuit, and that doesn't come up anywhere. Usually in these complaints, you try out every argument in your favor that you can because you want to give yourself the best chance of winning. And that's not an argument they put forth. So I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think odds are this is just the team wants an ownership group that is comprised of people that have larger stakes, financial stakes in the team, and these minority owners don't think that that can be forced down their throats.
How do you think this ends up?
I don't know. I mean, that's obviously why it's going to court. I do think we can't discount the fact that 19 other of owners in this situation have not joined the lawsuit and have done one or the other thing. But we'll see how it plays out in court, which is obviously, especially now with the coronavirus kind of shutdown of American life, could take months. But I'll be following along for kind of the major milestones in this. But I don't want to handicap it one way or the other, because I could maybe tell you who might win a baseball game, but not this.
One other question that was well put. One other question, and that is, Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic wrote about a scenario where the entire 2020 season could potentially be played in Arizona. You follow this very, very closely as well. Is that feasible? Has this gone down the tracks a little bit?
I think it's probably all theory right now. I think it'd be feasible under certain circumstances, and the main one there is that there is enough tests to make sure that everybody taking the field is not potentially spreading the virus. And I think right now, when a lot of sick people can't find tests to get tested, I can't see how that is pulled off. Maybe down the road, testing ramps up so much and becomes so available that this is actually doable. But right now, I don't know how you could, you know, have tests ready for players every single day when sick people who really need them can't get them. So until that hurdle is cleared, I don't see how this could work.
Good stuff there, especially on the story with the Diamondbacks. I appreciate your time and insight, Zach. Stay safe. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Zach Buchanan there over at The Athletic. Good stuff. All right, Eric on the other side. We started something new this last week. The class of 2020 that had the rug pulled out from under them. These are high school seniors that all of a sudden it was over. Poof. No prom. You know, they're not going to be able to walk. None of that. Eric has his class of 2020 next. So we were talking last week as a staff. We were heartbroken for the class of 2020 high school seniors who just had the rug pulled out from under them, basically. And can't blame Governor Ducey for shutting down the schools with the coronavirus. And we got talking and said, you know, all these kids have stories. And so Eric and Jordan and myself are starting to put some content out. I think Devin and Sandy are going to as well. Eric has a class of 2020 joining him now. Eric.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. One of my favorite athletes I've covered in recent years is Alexandra Zelaya. She is a two-time defending state champion basketball player at Millennium High School. She has signed to play at the University of North Carolina for the next 4 to 5 years, and we are happy enough to have her on the show now. So I guess, Allie, first question right out of the blocks is, how are you doing both mentally and physically with everything that's going on with the coronavirus?
You know, it's been hard to adjust because you go from like 100%, you know, going to school, going to workouts, strength training, basketball training, to completely being on lockdown, you know, staying at home. And it has been a little difficult to adjust, but, you know, mentally, I'm around my family and I'm such a homebody, and I just, my family is so important to me. And so to be able to spend this time with them, it's quality time. And yeah, it was difficult to adjust because everyone's home from college, you know, from work and all that kind of thing. But my family's been so supportive, and we've been staying positive and staying together during this. So that's been really great. And, you know, just physically, I'm continuing my basketball training. I got a hoop in my backyard, and strength training, I, you know, continue to do my workouts. North Carolina sent me a workout to start to get prepared. And yeah, I try to stay with the schedule and just kind of adjust it a little bit, but I'm still on the track, you know, to graduate. And hopefully when my summer session comes, and I'm still able to go out there and start it up with North Carolina. So, yeah.
So do us a favor and pull back the curtain a little bit on what UNC sent you in terms of your workout. Like, what kinds of things are they having you do individually?
Yeah, so right now they just sent us a strength workout, because obviously one of the biggest adjustments you'll make is not only like the speed of the game, but the strength and physicality of the game. And so they sent us a COVID-19 at-home workout, because, you know, obviously we're all supposed to be quarantining like at home. And so they made sure it was all things that we could do. And they asked us like what type of materials we have, so they can make a workout that's specific to like us and what we have. And so it's been lots of lunges, squats, you know, conditioning, jump roping, just a whole variation of things. You know, it definitely keeps me busy and it never gets boring. It's still a great workout.
So are you getting sick of your family yet? Be honest. I mean, you've been spending like the entire time with them. How's that been going?
That, like I said, it was definitely an adjustment, because again, you go from like going 7-hour school days or work days, and then now you're stuck with each other all day long. So yes, and I have two other siblings, an older sister and a younger sister. So we may bash heads a little bit here and there, but I mean, we're just, again, like, we're enjoying the time together. But yes, we do have moments where we just need to take a step back and, you know, go do our schoolwork alone or that kind of thing.
So in terms of your routine being changed so drastically, obviously you probably will not step foot on the campus of Millennium, at least as a student, again. How has it been sort of just adjusting to not having a prom? And are they still planning to do some sort of graduation at Millennium?
So that's the only thing that's still kind of going back and forth. They haven't made a final decision on whether or not we will like walk across the stage for graduation. You know, by the looks of it right now, it's kind of like looking more on the no side. And of course, that's like, those are the two major things you look forward to. And like your senior spring is definitely prom and graduation. And so, I mean, hearing that those kind of like monumental points in like your high school career are kind of like gone, and like, yeah, I did order a prom dress and I got it and stuff, so it was a little disappointing. But again, I'm so excited to not move on but to go on that next step and go to college and stuff. So I'm just trying to stay positive and like continue to look forward to what's coming for me. And of course, it's been really upsetting though that kind of the plan changed. You know, you come up with this plan in your head on how senior year is going to go, how it's going to end, and you know, like, we got the state championship. Okay, now it's prom. Now it's academics, you know, and that kind of thing. And it got switched up. But again, I'm so excited about going to North Carolina that that's just kind of like my focus now.
How fortunate do you feel that you actually got to complete your basketball season and your prep career as compared to your classmates who maybe baseball players or track athletes or things like that that had their time come up short because of the virus?
Yeah, I mean, we are so fortunate. I feel like a lot of people don't realize that. Like, we kind of had the timeline where it was right in time before everything started to get really serious and shut down. And so I can't tell you how much I realized how blessed we were to be able to go back to back. You know, we knew that we could do it, and to be able to actually execute that and get it done was great, because even some of like the incoming freshmen on North Carolina, they weren't able to finish up their season because, you know, the timelines are a little bit different, you know, like on East Coast and West Coast. And even like you said, like our baseball team, our boys volleyball team, I know they were planning to do some really great things this year. And so I feel so bad for them, that because I know how important sports are to like high schoolers in general. And also, like, for the seniors, because this is their last year. And so, and it's not like you can really redo your senior year in high school. Besides, you know, like in college, some athletes have been given the chance at a fifth year. I mean, you don't get that opportunity in high school. And so we are very, very fortunate that we got to finish our season.
All right, last question. Leave us with this. So you're not going to brag about it, but I am. You're a really good artist. Have you been working on any projects since you've been home and you haven't had to worry about school and things like that? Have you been up to any new creations that you've been up to?
Yes, and thank you for asking. I always love when you ask me these art questions because it's usually just all basketball. But, yeah, so I actually have I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but, like, people will, like, paint on jeans. And so I got fabric paint and I went to Goodwill and I got a bunch of jeans and I started painting. And I made like a whole marine life ocean themed pair of jeans. And then my mom's birthday is actually today. So happy birthday, Mom. And she asked me to do a painting for her office. And so I actually just finished that last night. So yeah, I've been keeping busy with art, most definitely. Cause like I said, it's a great stress reliever. And it's just been, I've had a lot of time on my hands. And so, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's always good to hear your voice. And you know I love chatting with you. So we'll be in touch and take care and be safe, okay?
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Talk to you soon. All right, Brad. That was Allie Zelaya.
She's charming.
Clearly, there's a lot more to her than just being a really, really good basketball player. So, really, she's got a bright future on and off the court for sure.
She is so charming. Those jeans. What a great story. Great story.
Definitely.
Good stuff. All right. I like that segment. If those of you, if whether you're watching and you've got a family member who is a senior in high school that was an athlete, okay, and they had it all pulled out from under them, let us know. You know, drop Eric a note, eric@sports360az.com, myself, Brad at sports360az.com, or Jordan. And it's pretty simple. And those kids, like she was talking about prom and her senior, you know, spring year, it was really well put. I look forward to seeing her. She's a heck of a player. I know you did the piece on her in basketball.
She's great.
All right, good job there. That's Eric Sorensen, of course, as always, and Jordan Hamm. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. We're going to go work on our television show now on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings per week. Brad Susmat, Football AZ. We appreciate our partners. We are self-funded. When you see commercials, these are people that believe in what we do. They partner with us. They say, go do what you do. We appreciate their support. Have a great Monday.